You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
The serious side of the J. Ryle Show is coming up next right here on the TJRS Radio Network online radio at its best.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
WWE Superstar Big Show here to tell you if you've been drinking, get a ride. Take a cab. Find another safe way to get home. Cops all across the country are cracking down on drunk driving. They will see you before you see them. Drive sober or get pulled over.
Online radio at its best. Online radio at its best.
Hey, 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 guten Tag.
If you're ready, map of the South.
Let's do this.
I'm telling you, I am first very honored that you would join me.
He has a very limited time spot, so we want to bring in Mr. Alan Sarrell right away.
Hey, how are you, Kathleen?
You know what? I'm going to make you do what it do,
baby. Man, what's crack-a-lackin', baby? What's crack-a-lackin'?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Ryle Show.
Don't try to call me out, princess. You can take your love and true purpose and stick it. She's a bitch.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
This week on the serious side.
Just let me get to my house.
Okay, we're gonna do this.
I swear to you, I'll give you what. I'll give you my whole body.
Okay.
I just need to get to my house.
Okay. We're gonna do that. Just throw the gun out the window.
I can't do that.
We're not gonna bother you. We're gonna let you go up there. Just throw it out the window, please. You're scaring everybody. OJ, you there?
This is for me. This is not to keep you guys away from me. This
I know
is for
that.
Me.
Nobody's going to hurt
this
you.
This is for me.
Okay, it's for you. I know that, but do it
this
for you.
This is for me, for me.
I know that. I know that, but do it for the kids, too, will you?
No.
Think of your kids.
No.
Please, just toss it out. You're scaring everybody, man.
No, I'm not going to hurt anybody.
I know you're not going to hurt anybody.
It's for me.
I know you're not, man.
I'm just going to go with me.
Please, you're scaring everybody, though.
An upset shaking Washington and rattling incumbent Republicans to their core. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor losing his primary to a little-known conservative challenger, economics professor David Bratt.
It's disappointing, sure. But I believe in this country. I believe there's opportunity around the next corner for all of us.
But of all the rocks upon which we build our lives, we are most dependent on the family. The family is that most important foundation. And we are called to recognize and honor how critical every father is to that foundation. They are teachers and coaches, they're mentors, and they're role models. They are examples of success and the men who constantly push us towards success.
Good morning and welcome to the serious side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jams Jazz Cafe, right here on the TJRS Radio Network. Good morning, folks. Today is June 15th, 2014. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And you're in tune to the serious side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TJRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. I'm J. Ryle. Of course, I'll never share the stage alone. I'm here with the man who gets the first and last word here on the serious side, the one and only Mr. L.E.S. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, sir, and how are you?
Man, I'm doing great, man. I want to say Happy Father's
Happy
Day to you because
Father's
even though
Day.
You're not, yeah. I know you don't have a child, but I tell you what, you play that role for a lot of kids. And so, you know, Happy Father's Day to you, big man.
Happy Father's Day to you too, my brother.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We wish you guys are, hope you guys are having a great day so far. I know the day is just getting started, but who knows? By this time tomorrow, you can look back on this day and say, look, my kids did the wild thing and did the wonderful thing for me. Now, I know that they're saying that spending is down for Father's Day, but, hey, hopefully we can rally and we can, you know, make it happen. So happy Father's Day to all the guys out there. The calling number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. You can call in, be a part of the conversation. We have a great show on tap for you. Now let's get started with what we heard on the lead-in. You know, 20 years ago, well, actually on the 17th of this month, would be the 20-year anniversary of the Chase. If you were watching the NBA Finals, all of a sudden you noticed in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen there was a little picture-in-picture showing the Chase, the O.J. Simpson Chase. And it's been 20 years, so Mr. Elias, let's get started with this conversation, man. Look, 20 years ago, the Chase happened, and we all know what happened with that verdict. We all know what happened with that trial. After 20 years, and I'm not sure which side of the fence that you're on with this thing with O.J., 20 years later, do you still, first of all, do you think he did it? And if you do think he did it, then has 20 years changed your decision or changed your mind as far as what the outcome of that trial should have been?
No, Jay, I don't think he did it, to be honest. I don't.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't. It's just me. And did it change 20 years later? Did it change my mind? No, it hasn't changed my mind. I think it showed what our justice system is about 20 years ago today. And it showed a country divided. That's what I truly believe. The country was truly divided because, you know, I remember where I was at. I was working at a company called Blank and Blank. And it was a couple of black people, a couple of white people, and a couple of Mexican people, and we were all divided. Everybody, you know, everybody was black was clapping when he got acquitted, and you know, everybody that was white was mad that he didn't get to go to jail. So, you know, that's just the way it went down, man. It was just nuts, man, to see how we were divided like that, and it showed me how divided we were. So. No, I don't think so. I don't think he was guilty of it. I don't.
Well,
I don't.
Interesting. Because, you know, there's a documentary out there, and it shows two people that weren't interviewed during the trial. And these two individuals, had they testified, I think that the outcome may have been different. But I think when you go back and look at what happened during that whole time frame, first of all, Johnny Cochran and crew, they were very successful in changing the, you know, making the jurors think that they as in the LAPD somehow contaminated the DNA and you know, this is a conspiracy. Well, we all know 20 years later that DNA cannot be contaminated. Your DNA is your DNA. So if, you know, just
right,
based on that alone, the fact that the evidence overwhelmingly shows that O.J. Simpson was there when that murder happened. His DNA was all over the place. But once again, they were able to convince the jury. But no,
DNA,
I'm talking about
all over the place.
Well, Mr. Elias, I'm talking about right there. His DNA shouldn't be, you know, on that guy Goldman. His DNA shouldn't be over the murder weapon. I mean, O.J.'s DNA was everywhere, and they found blood from those individuals in his Bronco DNA. But once again, because of the fact that Johnny Cochran and those guys were so successful, remember, DNA was in its infancy stages. No one really understood the power of DNA. So, you know, since then we've had CSI, and CSI has really made it easier for a lot of prosecutors across the country because they've illustrated, and plus, you know, just we're smarter now. I remember when Magic Johnson had AIDS, and everybody thought, I mean, he had HIV virus, and everyone thought that, oh, my God, if he rubbed up against me, I would catch it. Remember Karl Malone? He didn't want to play in the same game with Magic Johnson because we just did not know. But then as we became more educated, we realized that, okay, you can't catch HIV by being next to somebody. And now we know that you cannot contaminate DNA. So now I'm thinking that had this trial happened today, O.J. Simpson would be convicted.
I mean, you're right. You got a right to your opinion. I got a right to mine. I don't think so, man. I don't think.
Well, I just don't understand how you don't think so. I mean, Mr. Elias, okay, so how do you explain Goldman's blood in his Bronco?
Who had his Bronco?
He had his Bronco.
You know, okay, was his Bronco impounded? Look, man, anything can be set up the way you want it. I don't trust police. I do not trust the police, man. I just don't. It's just me. I do not trust the police whatsoever.
And that's fine. I understand that. But here's the other part of that whole situation. That they were also able, based on, you know, Mark Furman and the tape that they played of him saying, they asked him on the stand, you know, listen, you have to give Johnny Cochran all the credit in the world. Because they set him up. They asked him on the stand, have you ever used this type of language before? Have you ever done this? So what they did was, instead of putting O.J. Simpson on trial, they put the LAPD on trial. And so all of a sudden, Mark Furman goes on the stands and says, oh, I've never used that language before. And then here's a tape of him using the N-word every other word. So it was a brilliant strategy. But I think it was smoke and mirrors. I, for one, was not one of those black people who were cheering when O.J. Simpson, when they said he was not guilty. I said, oh, my God, this is a gross injustice, man. There's no way anyone can look at that and walk away saying that. And look, and I didn't know a whole lot about DNA, but just based on what I saw, I figured this guy was guilty. And so now you sit back and look at Mr. It's just, when you sit back and look at everything, it's everything. You know, you heard the post, the lead-in, the intro. This guy was driving down the highway with a gun, talking about he wanted to kill himself. I mean, what? It just don't jive. If that would have taken place right now, I believe O.J. Simpson would have been convicted of murder, two counts, if it had happened today. Because we know too much right now. You can't explain some of this stuff away. You just can't. And see, and then the other part of it was, when they allowed him to put on that glove, okay? Now, first of all, he had on plastic gloves, right? And then you're going to try to make him put on leather gloves. Now, first of all, we all know that's not going to slip on easily. All right. The second part of that is, we all also know that when leather gets wet, it shrinks. We know that as well. So, I mean, once again, brilliant game plan by Johnny Cochran. Brilliant. But at the end of the day, I think that had this murder happened right now, based on the facts and based on DNA, because once again, you cannot contaminate DNA, I think he would have been found guilty. I don't know. We'll see. Our political strategist, Jerome Esprit, is in the house. Good morning, Jerome. Happy Father's Day to you, my friend.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Well, you know, listen, I know, once again, I'm not sure if you have kids or not, but I know that you mentor the kids. I know that anytime an African-American man, especially an African-American man, plays that role or assumes some of that responsibility, I'll be the first to take my hat off and say Happy Father's Day to him. So Happy Father's Day to you, Jerome.
Well, Happy Father's Day to you guys as well.
So we're talking about the, you know, on June 17th, 2014 will be the 20th anniversary, Jerome, of the chase. And that's when O.J. Simpson was slow rolling down the, what was it, 410, or what was it, 310, or what was it, I-10? I can't remember the highway, but he was slow rolling. And, you know, the NBA finals were on, and all of a sudden you had this small picture-in-picture box of O.J. and the white Bronco. So we're talking about that now. First of all, your thoughts, and I think that we've had conversations, I think last year when the anniversary came up, we had this similar conversation. I think you believe that he was innocent. And so my question for you is, after
you're
20
biased,
years.
By the way, I just want to share that with you, but
go ahead. No,
you're
what
very
now?
Biased, so that's really hilarious to me.
No, I'm not biased, Jerome. I'm just saying that I saw a documentary the other night, and there were two witnesses that they were not allowed to. I'm not going to say they weren't allowed to interview, but I think that the prosecutors, okay, that's right, the prosecutors were so sure that they would convict them on blood evidence that they didn't put these people on the stand. And that probably hurt them in the long run. But what I was saying was how Johnny Cochran and those guys, you can't, come on, Jerome, you cannot contaminate DNA. You can't do it.
Okay, you know, and so, okay, I did listen to you say things like if it happened today that he would be convicted. No, he wouldn't.
I think he would have.
Yeah, you can think that, but what I'm saying to you is that the jurors sat there and heard the whole thing. They were not being biased. They actually said after, if you remember, that we don't really understand what the big fuss is about. They didn't prove that he was there. They proved that the glove was planted. They proved all that stuff by Furman. They proved that the blood that O.J. gave them when he was on the scene was not there when they took pictures at the original crime scene. So you can't have a photo on the back gate with O.J.'s blood after you had a photo like 2 days earlier with no blood on it. I don't know if you didn't see all of that stuff, but this is amazing to me that you're saying the History Channel is, or whoever, whatever you watch, led you to believe that. I mean, we get
no, I've always believed that.
But we're getting people let out of jail right now who've been in jail for 20 and 30 years on trumped up stuff. And you think they didn't trump up O.J.?
No, listen, I hear what you're saying, and I'm not saying that it couldn't have happened. I watched that trial like nobody's business. I mean, I was at home watching that thing, and I walked away. Huh?
And so did I. I didn't watch a lot of the commentary because I saw what the commentary is. I'm a media person, so I knew what the spin was as soon as I watched it. I watched the trial, and I watched the evidence, and then I watched them spin that when the nightly news came on. I watched them put up I watched Johnny Conklin cross-examine the police photographer and say, okay, is the time date stamp on this thing correct? And he said, yeah. He said, are you sure? When's the last time you tested? He went through the whole thing. And then he said, okay, well, how come, you know, 2 hours before, there's no bloody sock on his bed in an immaculately clean room with a white rug? How come there's no bloody sock there? And then a couple of hours later, there's a bloody sock. The policeman couldn't answer it. He said, no, understand this. Let's go to this picture. He goes to another picture, the back gate. A day before, here's a picture of the gate. You don't see any blood, do you? And the policeman said, no. And he said, "How?" And you took this. And he said, and so you took the picture after as well, and there's blood. How do you account for your time stamp having no blood on the back gate and then after the fact it has blood on the back gate?
Mm-hmm.
So if you watch that like the jurors did, you would say, wait a minute, this is Jack. Right? If you look at the sound bites, all you did is you look at the news and see the headline saying they found O.J.'s blood on the scene. But what you didn't know if you didn't watch the trial is that they took a vial of blood from O.J. when he was there to exclude him. He was dumb for giving him blood on the scene.
No, I remember that.
I wouldn't have gave him Jack.
No, I remember that. I mean, I really do.
Right.
Go ahead.
Do you remember them putting his blood in the evidence bag where all of the samples were? And keeping it in the car for 2 days? You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
okay,
I remember that.
Right.
I don't recall the bloody socks. I don't recall the bloody socks being on a white rug. I remember the photo that I saw. They were like,
they were
like
on
one of those. Okay, I remember them. I don't remember.
With one sock,
I don't. But see, here's the deal. And I also remember the fact that, you know, when he flew out that night before. I mean, listen, it's been a while, and I know my memory's not the best, but I just recall, by watching that whole thing, I walked away saying this guy did it. Now, I mean, listen, it's just we're going to have to agree to disagree. I mean, I just felt that O.J. Simpson did it. And when you go back and kind of look at the book that he wrote, If I Did It, Had I Did It, and all this other stuff.
Okay, O.J. did not write that book. Now, you want a book, I'll give you one.
This
is the 20th anniversary. You know, F. Lee Bailey, as we all know, is Ironside. You know, they based the character Ironside off F. Lee Bailey.
Right. Is he still alive, by the way? Is he still alive?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and he wrote in 2011 The Simpson Verdict by F. Lee Bailey. If you want to go look it up, it's on his website. It was the first written account of the trial that he wrote, posted. It was a 46-page paper. It details the outline supporting that the jury reached the proper decision, and it also talked about the planet, blood evidence, the glove, and the defense had a smart bomb, which they called, and I wasn't going to say his name, but I'm going to say his name. This guy, Thomas Lang, not the officer Thomas Lang, who spelled his name a little differently, but this guy lived two blocks away near Nicole's condo. He saw two guys, 100% sure that one of them wasn't O.J. And Johnny Conklin said he decided not to let that witness be used because it would stretch out the trial and the prosecution was going for a mistrial. So Johnny Cochran decided not to do it, but F. Lee Bailey said, if it was me, I would have put him on. because he is the only person that's going to be able to identify. He identified Nicole in the back dress. He wrote it down. He recorded it. He went to work, and his boss was an attorney, and he gave another account for what happened. So it's written and it's on tape, and that dude was a witness prior. Now, more importantly, he owned no less than 11 Ford trucks, and he said the truck that was in front of her house was a F-350. He knew that for sure. It was not a Bronco. So I am saying, if you want to read something, F. Lee Bailey, on his go on his website, it's the Simpson verdict. You can just put it in any search engine. And he lays it out in detail, the parameters of that case and the testimony, if you want to go see it. Forget what you, the whole summary, because it's an impression thing that you get when you talk about media. They're quick into the story, and they want to give you an impression. It's like watching Fox News back then.
And listen, I hear you. I mean, I hear what you're saying, and, you know, but, you know, all the talk in the world is not going to convince me different. I'm just being honest. Now, I may have to go read this book, and maybe that'll give me a different impression, but based on what I saw, things that I've read subsequently about the trial, I still think he got away with it. Now, I'm not a fan of the fact that he's in jail now, because I think what they did was they were trying to figure out a way to get him. And matter of fact, they even had the Las Vegas police officers on tape, like, yeah, we finally got his ass, and saying something along those lines. And, you know, and I felt that, okay, that was misjustice on OJ's behalf. Hey, listen, he was tried. He was found not guilty. That's our justice system. You know, it's as flawed as it may be, because we know that there are people in jail right now who did not commit any crime, that they're not in jail for the crime that they were convicted on or for. But it is the system that we have in place, and we just have to kind of live with it. And, you know. Is what
and
it is.
He would have been one of them. Yeah, and he would have been one of them.
Well,
I mean
that's,
although,
I hear you.
Although you're saying, but although you're saying, because, Jay, you keep paraphrasing this like you know he did it. And I'm saying you may feel
no,
like
I don't know that. I didn't say that. I didn't say that, Jerome.
But,
I said that in my opinion,
watched, all the evidence
I think
over
he did
all
it.
These years and what you know now, that you believe that he did it. And I'm saying I'm giving you all this stuff, and I'm sure you never heard that guy Thomas Lang's name. I'm sure you didn't hear that about the Ford truck.
No, you're right. I didn't. I
haven't. About walking his dog, seeing Nicole and these two guys while she was wearing a black dress. He described the two guys, and he said he stopped his dog from going that way because he didn't want his dog to make any noise to let those guys see him watching them. So he went back the other way. I'm sure you didn't hear that. But all I'm saying
no, I didn't.
Is, right, but I'm saying that came out in 2011.
Okay.
I'm saying as we update information, we have to update what we're seeing. And I knew when those documentaries for OJ was created around, I think it was a couple years after, I knew that was etching it in stone of everybody's mind. It's like watching something on something that happened with Native Americans that was written, or watching Birth of a Nation. Everybody talks about how great that movie is, and it's one of the number one cinematic movies, how crazy that is, crazy racist it is, and saying we need to live in the 1930s just to believe that movie. You can't look at no documentaries that far back and then say you need to update your knowledge. You can update your knowledge as you go, and there's evidence, and there are statements out there, and there are people out there who have more evidence. And like I said, if you just listen to the jurors, then you would have a whole different impression. But forget what the commentators and the media and the prosecution are saying. Listen to the jurors. The jurors sat through the whole thing. I mean, and I watched a lot of it live. I only watched the prosecution. I didn't really watch much of the defense because I know that our bias comes from looking at people's body, you know, body movements and behavior, saying I don't really believe him because of whatever. It ain't that. It is the fact that when they went to prove that, they were piecing together all sorts of crazy stuff that didn't matter. Like, I don't know if you know, they went to OJ's first wife, who was black. I can't remember her name. Went to her house and said that your car had been broken into. So when her husband came out to see the car, she noticed that he didn't come back. So the police held him. They banged on her door again. And as soon as she opened it, some 6'8" or so policeman stuck his foot in her door and threw her a summons. They tried to force her to testify against him. She said he never put his hands on me. She didn't like the way they were trying to strong-arm her to make her say something bad about him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're not watching all of this stuff to say you're to give a really big picture of what happened, you'll see that the pressure of the government to actually use their unlimited resources to give you that impression has a lot to do with why you see the world like you do. Because technically, they were flat out trying to make his case this romantic case of the century, whereas Effie Bailey said her current boyfriend, he talked to him since the murders, and he talked to OJ. And again, he caught him having oral sex with his wife in that house, and he didn't kill him. He yelled at him, and he didn't kill him. And they actually know each other. So I'm saying he's not going to kill her for somebody dropping off some glasses. It just really does not make any sense. So in any argument about why he would be so enraged about some other guy is crazy. Mm-hmm. That is crazy to say that when there's so much more damaging things that somebody can get mad over. The motive is just not there.
Right, 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to The Serious Side of the Jay Rouse Show on Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the people out there, to all the guys out there. 347-850-1272. We're talking about the O.J. Simpson case 20 years later. And, you know, as usual, my esteemed colleague Jerome Esprit and myself, we disagree. You know, and that's okay. And listen, you know, what he's saying is absolutely correct. I think that if you get out, and I hear where he's going with it, and I will. I promise the audience I'll do this. I'll go and read this book and see what it says. And see if it, you know, if it changes my mind about the situation. I think I'm a fair-minded
online,
guy.
I'll send you a link.
Okay.
I think I'm a
fair-minded guy. And if I read this book and, you know, and if it convinces me, I'll be the first to come back here next week and tell you that it did. But just based on what I watched and what I saw, I just felt that the guy got away with it. And you know, but you know, hey, listen, we're entitled to our own opinions. Now, like I said, I'm not happy that the fact he's in jail now. Because what they did in Las Vegas, where they really tried that guy based on what happened in 1994, 95. It wasn't based on the facts of what happened during that whole situation. Because I felt that even though, you know, O.J., Mr. Elias, he didn't have the right to go in and do what he did. But the bottom line is they threw kidnapping charges, people being held against their will. I mean, it was just a bunch of nonsense that they threw up against the wall, and they made that crap stick. And for that guy to go to jail for that period of time, it was really a death sentence.
Right. That's what they did. They you know, you can tell by the way they said, we finally got him. You know?
Yep.
And it's just crap, man. It is what it is, man. You know, they wanted to get this guy. And he should have laid low. That was just my opinion. If he'd have laid low, you know, he'd be the person to still get, man. But, hey, man, people set him up, and he fell into the trap, man, which we all do sometimes. We all fall into different traps, man.
And then go ahead, Jerome.
I think they would have found something on him at some point. Like, there's too many jurisdictions to travel like that. You know, people go to jail for a lot less. I mean, you can go to jail for spitting like that. You know what I mean? We all know that that's a health code violation, and now that it's you can arrest people for misdemeanors now, and you can actually go to jail if you spit in front of the police. Like,
yeah,
and
if you're in Malaysia, they'll spank your tail. I mean, you can't do that in Malaysia.
Yeah.
I mean,
no,
it's,
but I'm saying in this country, our laws are so loose that they make up stuff on the fly. They got.
Yeah.
OJ for kidnapping because he was standing in front of the door.
Right.
He didn't
stop
that dude
from
leaving.
Right.
He could just stand in front of the door and they said, this kidnapping, he couldn't leave because he was standing there.
Yeah. Yeah. And once again, it was just a situation where they were trying to get him from what happened before. And you know, that was bogus. That was totally bogus. And it is what it is now, at this point. So, go ahead.
That's why I think that the trial, everybody, the prosecution played it correctly. They played on everybody's emotion, and they tried to play, you know, she's white female and she's a victim, and they did all of that to his detriment because it's easy to vilify somebody black. He's a big, strong football player, although he had arthritis and couldn't lift his kid up earlier in the day at the recital. You know, his back was hurting. He couldn't lift him above his shoulders. And they made, you know, this emotional appeal of him being an athlete, saying that he scaled a fence, and, you know, Ron Goldman was like a third or fourth degree black belt who had scuffs on his feet and his hands. He actually fought somebody, and OJ has a scratch, and they're like, yeah, he did it. like they did that emotionally, and so you really have to kind of pull back from some of that stuff and say, how is it that we get convicted into systems? And the reason is that they get you emotionally tied in it. It's just like, I don't mean to tie these two together, but it's like the Zimmerman case where they played on white folks' fears. You just say, hey, he could have thought, and that's what they went for. So you could believe that OJ could have done it, and so then they played on that. So there's a way of playing people through their emotions, and I think they just do a good job of it. And just like in Vegas, he couldn't leave, like, no. And they convicted him on kidnapping was the biggest charge that he had.
Not yeah, that you're right about anything. That.
Yeah, he didn't go to jail for stealing OJ's stuff. OJ got sent to jail for kidnapping because he went to claim his stuff and didn't let the guy
leave. Yeah, that was bogus. That was bogus. And it's funny you mentioned that because someone had mentioned that, just sent me a message saying, you know, what about the George Zimmerman trial? You know, you say that he would have been convicted, but, you know, look at what happened with George Zimmerman. And you know what? I tell you what, I hear where they're going with that. But on one hand, I think that situation was slightly different because, you know, there was no doubt George Zimmerman killed that kid. And so it became, like you said, Jerome, they were just playing on the fears of here's this black guy in a hoodie and, you know, he had to defend himself. It was totally bogus. And they even interviewed people after the fact you know, they said, hey, based on the way the law was written, you know, we had to convict him. I mean, we had to let him go, even though we felt that he was guilty as hell. So, you know, it's just, it is what it is at this point. All right, let me get final thoughts on this. Let me start with you first, Jerome. What are your final thoughts on this topic, my friend?
Well, I guess I don't really have a final thought on it. I just think that it's kind of one of those things where we have to update our thinking. Like, don't let the History Channel program you to everything. I think it pretty much keeps us stagnant when we don't let our history get updated. So, you know, with the passing of Ruby Dee and Maya Angelou, knowing that Ruby Dee and Maya Angelou spoke at Malcolm and Martin's funerals and that they were friends, I think we think of those guys as being adversaries as well. But if you don't update history and don't know that folks had mutual friends or, you know, there were different evidence that came out later, if you don't update your thinking, don't let people program you to believe that same garbage that everybody believed over the years. So I guess my thought is that we have to keep growing and getting smarter, and we can't just live off of the bias that people write to make us believe one thing or another.
Celius, what are your final thoughts on this topic, my friend?
Well, to me, this showed how divided this country was, man, and it's still divided. Nothing too much has changed in this country from the 90s to now. So, hey, folks, just have an open mind. Just because you see it on TV doesn't necessarily mean it's the way it is.
Interesting. And I'll throw one out here before we close it up, too. You know, bottom line is I think that, and Jerome's right, I think we have to go back and update our thinking, make sure that our tablet has been refocused and recentered and recalibrated. I guess that's the term I'm looking for, just to make sure we have all the facts. But I still say that I think OJ did it. But, hey, we'll see. Maybe I'll come back next week and say something different. All right, folks, listen. One set in the books, but I tell you what, we have a lot to talk about. Coming up next, see ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya. Eric Cantor, get the hell out of here. It's the Serious Side. We'll be right back after this.
Too many fathers are AWOL.
Well,
missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. We need families to raise our children. We need fathers to recognize that responsibility doesn't just end at conception. That doesn't just make you a father. What makes you a man is not the ability to have a child. Any fool can have a child.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
an upset shaking Washington and rattling incumbent Republicans to their core. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor losing his primary to a little-known conservative challenger, economics professor David Bratt.
It's disappointing, sure. But I believe in this country. I believe there's opportunity around the next corner for all of us.
Welcome back in. 347-850-1272 is our calling number, 347-850-1272 on this Father's Day edition of The Serious Side. Glad you guys are in the house. I want to say what's up to Ed Williams. I think that's his name. He wants to say happy Father's Day to his father, Big Ed. He said Big Ed is listening out of Cleveland, Ohio. Well, good morning, Big Ed, and happy Father's Day to you and to all the other fathers out there. Hanging out with my boys, as usual. My main man, Mr. Elias, is in the house. Good morning, Mr. Elias. How are you?
Good morning, everyone.
Happy Father's Day as well. And my main man, Jerome Esprit, the smartest man in the world, Jerome. Jerome, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Doing outstanding. Well, you heard the lead-in. He's gone. He's out of here. Eric Cantor, number two in the Republican Party, the GOP in the House, he's gone. He lost in the primary to a guy who was surprised as hell that he won. You know, when they interviewed him, it's like, oh, really? So he lost to some guy by the name of Dave Bratt. And so now, let me start with you, Jerome. Okay, how devastating of a loss is this? And does this put Republicans on notice that, hey, you know what? If you piss the Tea Party off, then guess what, big guy? You could be next. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with the Tea Party, actually. I mean,
well, that's what they're saying.
Interesting enough. Well, you can have an opposition vote. And I think the arrogance of, you know, of running for office sometimes leads that to happen. I mean, I've seen people go down who has been in office for a long period of time when they don't handle their constituent services. And he, you know, a lot of reports said that he just had a lot of ambition and he was thinking that he would be speaker at some point. And his constituents wasn't happy with him. But let this be another lesson to gerrymandering your district.
What happens
is that if you put too many people who think alike in one region, they will never be happy. It's why you don't start a business based up on your friends and family. You don't say, hey, if I build this restaurant, my friends and family going to eat here. They will never pay. So you don't gerrymander anything around people who think alike because they're going to spit you out first. So Eric Cantor, who really wasn't a Tea Party person, ended up being their spokesperson, and then they didn't like him. They weren't naturally his constituents. But he created a district now that they're his constituents and he didn't play up to them well enough.
Yeah, everything I read is the fact that, you know, he embraced some of that talk just to get, you know, just to become a person that they looked up to. But then eventually a lot of people said who were around him that they knew he wasn't that way. But he was the mastermind, Mr. Elias, based on some things that I read. He was the mastermind behind getting his Republican colleagues to say no, to become that opposition and become, you know, to say no to the president, you know, and he was the mastermind. He convinced his Republican colleagues that if we just continue to be obstructionists and don't do anything, that eventually they will win the day. They had a meeting after he was voted into office, Mr. Elias, a private meeting where Eric Cantor was the mastermind to this whole thing. The mastermind.
Maybe.
Unbelievable.
Maybe he should have been the mastermind on how to win his district. The bottom line is this, man. You know, that's one thing I was going to say. I mirror what Jerome said. When you set aside your districts on how you want to set aside them, you can gerrymander your districts all you want to. It is sometimes the chickens come home to roost, man. And, you know, bottom line is, man, look, if they hadn't gerrymandered their district, a lot of people would be out of office, Jay. And that's just the bottom line. A lot of people. Only just one. It would be a lot of them.
Well, it's interesting because when you sit back and kind of look at everything and the temperature of everything, you know, for the longest, he was really at odds with
with the speaker, because he, once again, he was trying, he was out there on the fringe trying to, you can't serve two masters. And I think what Eric Kander found out was, and I think Jerome said this just a few seconds ago, that once you piss one off, then it's curtains for you. You know, Laura Ingraham and all these conservative talk show hosts, they were coming after this guy. That the guy who beat him only spent, what, a little over $100,000?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. Eric Cantor's out eating steaks and doing. He took it for granted that he was going to be reelected, and it was a blow to him. And I tell you what, I'm glad he's gone. I am so glad, because these guys have been nothing but obstructionists, and it really pisses me off when you sit and look at what they do, Jerome, and they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it. Even though this guy took the bullet, trust me, it wasn't because of the fact that he was an obstructionist. It's because the Tea Party people felt he wasn't conservative enough, and they, and like you said, all of them in one district, they got his ass out of there. And, you know, the bottom line is, huh?
He's not the only one that's going to go down.
Who else do you think is going down?
Oh, please. Think about it. Think about it this way. I know we talked about this in the last congressional, not the last congressional race, but the one before, where I was talking about New York 11, which is near Buffalo, very conservative, 76% Republican, I think, and they were pretty much seniors. They have more seniors than anyone else. Nobody won that. No Democrat won it in 100 years. And when they had that, you know, they're going to kill grandma and Medicaid was going to go and we need to privatize Social Security, a Democrat won. That was the first time somebody won in 100 years in that district. Republicans, the people who are Republicans, are getting tired of that ball. They're kicking out the establishment Republicans, and they're going to do that to the detriment of losing Democrats generally. And the biggest thing that I hopefully you didn't miss and you were going to bring up later is the polling. You know, he polled about 35 points ahead of this guy.
Right. He
so
did.
I know you love to bring up the polling.
I knew you love to bring up the fact that I love polls. Thank you. Yeah.
No. I'm just saying, because when you say that like I'm wrong. You're like, you know, I know Jerome don't believe in this, but the polling said Eric Cantor had 35 points on him. And I want to remind
you. Oh, man.
I have won a race. I've done strategy for a candidate who had pretty much the person that they was running against had 10 times as much money as they had and still won the race. There's a way to win without money. Don't believe that money is your winning answer to the question.
Right, and I think Eric Cantor found that out firsthand. I mean, you know, he had a lot of money. He felt that he didn't have to go back to the district. The campaign, you know, he just felt that he had it in the bag. And like you said, he was thinking about the bigger picture. He wanted to be Speaker of the House one day. Well, now he's going to find him a job. And he, you know, look, he said he's going to be a lobbyist, Mr. Elias. So, I mean, that's nothing new. But the bottom line is it's a shock. It's a shocker. No one saw this coming. And I guess for me, you know, what does this say about our country when we have these fringe groups? You know, let me ask you something, and Jerome, you would know this. Now, the Tea Party, was that something that Fox started? I remember when they had that big rally, and I think Glenn Beck was. I mean, where did they come from? What's the origin of the Tea Party?
The Tea Party is very old. It's it stands for tax. What is it? It was just a group that was just they just didn't want to pay taxes. I mean, they've been around for a long time, just saying that they thought the IRS needed to go. And they pretty much got hijacked. The Tea Party, and people came up with different Tea Party factions and all this and that.
Oh, okay.
Tea Party generally was just this group of folks who just didn't believe in paying taxes. They didn't think the federal government should tax. And so it's a very old group, but don't believe that the people who are claiming Tea Party now are have anything to do with part of Tea Party. It got hijacked. It's like Occupy Wall Street got hijacked at some point.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you can start off with a really good cause and then have your cause get swayed off to something else. Not paying taxes has nothing to do with war or stopping the president's agenda or not paying your bills. Like, it just got hijacked and they kept Tea Party and saying we're fiscally conservative and we want to balance the budget. That's not what the Tea Party was there for. The Tea Party does not like, they just didn't want any government intervention at all. So you can't be
right.
in government trying to get yourself, here was Cantor's problem. He wanted to run a government that he kept saying the government's not legit, right? So you can't run something when you tell the people who's voting that it's not legitimate, because once you get there, it's still illegitimate when you get there, too. I don't think they figured that out. They thought that they can talk out of both sides of their mouths. They can point the finger at one politician and not have it point back at them.
Well, you know, the thing that's funny, you mentioned that. And, you know, Mr. Ellie, that's something I've always thought about, how all these people, they step up to the plate. They talk about how the government is this and government is that. You know, you think about Ted Cruz and all these knuckleheads that are out there, but yet still they want to be a part of it. If it's so corrupt, if it's so this, that, and the other, why do you want to be a part of it? I mean, it to me is one of, you know, how, you know, we talk about intelligent conversations by ordinary people. That's what this is. I just can't understand how people, well, all the government, they're this, they're that. But wait a minute. You want to be a part of the government. You want to take advantage of all the benefits of being a congressperson. But the government is so jacked up. I mean, it just doesn't pass the common sense test for me.
Well, the common sense knowledge is power and money. So that's why they want to be parts of it. You know, it's simple to me. Hell, I can sit there and tell you, hell, all these clowns talk about they don't want free health care, you know, free health care, Obamacare, but they got free health care and some of the best health care in the world. So if you don't like it and you are that opposed to it, why are you a part of it? I mean, it's all smoke and mirrors to me. Bottom line, if I was opposed to something and I didn't like it, I wouldn't accept it. I would throw it. I don't want it. But hell, they'll tell you all along, all day long, free health care is bad. It's going to ruin the country. Then turn yours down if it's that bad. Turn yours back in.
Yeah. Yeah, wishful thinking on that one, right? It's 10 before the top of the hour. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Rowell Show. It happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Our call in number is 347-850-1272, 347-850-1272. Now, don't forget, a little later in the show, it's on the need-to-know basis with Jerome Esprit. Can't wait to hear that. Plus, we have Chatterbox. And before we go, Chatterbox will allow you, if you don't want to call in, if you're shy, bashful, don't want to hear your voice on the radio, you can participate in the show. However, you can put comments in our World Famous chat room, or you can put comments from wherever you are listening from, and we will search as I scan the web as we speak right now, looking for comments. And so if they're good enough, we'll actually read those during Chatterbox, which comes up in about an hour or so. We're talking about Eric Cantor. Yes, sir.
Easy sent us a message saying the Tea Party stands for tax enough already. Tell you it's from the Boston Tea Party.
Yep. I knew that part. I knew it was from the Boston Tea Party. I didn't realize. I just wanted to know the origin of it, because I know that all of a sudden it was just out of nowhere. It seems to me that it was invented during President Obama's presidency. It's like you never heard these clowns before, and all of a sudden they're prominent. And you know, you have Tea Party divisions in different states and counties and things of that nature. And it's, I think that's exactly what Jerome was saying, that it was somewhat hijacked. And you have this. I was driving through the neighborhood the other day, and I saw someone who had the "Don't Tread on Me" flag, which is, I guess, the flag that represents the Tea Party. And I just shook my head, because you talk about the condition that the country's in. It's amazing that the country feels that we are worse off than we were before this president took office. It just, I don't know. We're just a nation of dummies, Jerome. It's just ridiculous.
Hey.
I don't get it.
Yep. And it's amazing that people still have that thought, because it's the marketing. I think people can't get past marketing of something, right? And it's just like in our first conversation with the OJ stuff. That was a heck of a marketing job done over a long, long period of time. So if you keep marketing the president as, you know, he doesn't have a birth certificate, people actually start to believe that stuff. People grow up believing the president wasn't born in this country, although he was born in Hawaii, and they didn't say that. They don't think Hawaii is a part of the country. They just said that he's not. Like, so it's really funny. You market something long enough, you can tell a lie long enough that people go, I don't really know what the truth is. And that's the lazy way of thinking. when you can easily just find out.
Well, here's stuff that I always wanted to ask you, and along those lines. You know, they talk about, now Ted Cruz this past week renounced his citizenship to Canada. He was born in Canada. But people are saying that this guy is, you know, a strong, you know, is a possible contender for the presidency. Now, I thought you had to be born in this country or to be even considered, you know, be considered for the office. I don't understand how this guy was born in Canada. How is that so? I don't get that.
Yeah, it is very clear that you have to be a naturalized citizen. Like, you have to be born in the country. But I think they're just waiting to challenge that in court. Nobody really challenged it with John McCain because he was born in the Panama Canal Zone, which was
But he was born on a U.S.
It was a U.S. base.
Right.
But it still was foreign soil of the U.S. base. Right. And
So but there because was of the agreements.
In there.
But because of our agreements, because of my daughter. Huh?
You can be a citizen born someplace else. But a naturalized citizen is, I think they specifically said, a citizen that was born here. I mean, I don't know what that means, and that's where the legal fight was going to come in. You had to be a naturalized citizen, not a citizen born abroad. So they were just going to wait for a court challenge.
I think we have to do some research on that, because I know my daughter was actually born in Frankfurt, but because she was born on a U.S. facility, you know, that means she's a citizen of the United States.
President is different. You have to be over the age of 45, and you have to be a naturalized citizen.
So you're telling me that my daughter has no chance of being president of the United States?
I'm saying that I guarantee you, if she ran and she had a good chance of winning, they would take her to court. They wouldn't take John McCain to court, but your daughter is dang sure going. We need to talk about OJ. They drop her out before she even get on a primary ballot. Like, she is not.
Oh, man, that's funny. 347-850-1272. So now, what does this mean now? So now, all Republicans, are their heads on a swivel at this point, Jerome? I mean, because Boehner in trouble? Is what's the guy in Kentucky? I can see this guy with the glasses. What is that guy? McConnell. Is he in trouble?
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, is he in trouble? I mean, so now, should they say, oh, my God, what's going on here? Should their heads be on a swivel at this point, Jerome?
I think they're caught between a rock and a hard place. Like, it's just kind of one of those things now that you banked on the discontent. Like, when you run a race based on hate, they think, and I've seen a lot of races go this way, and it's always been funny to me because I kept telling people that people don't think like they did in the 40s, in the 30s.
Right.
You can't run a race saying, I hate that guy, vote for me. And for the past, I don't know, 5-6 years, that's what they've been doing with the president. So you can't keep running a race on this country is not getting any better when everybody knows that it's better than it was when he took office. Everybody knows that. They may not. You can always find something to argue about, but you can dang sure believe that we don't have $5 a gallon gas prices. And, you know, and speaking of that, what's going on with Iraq? It's funny to watch news coverage of that because every smart person that I've ever seen talk about this says this was all George Bush's fault, right?
Yeah.
This is what's going on in Iraq now is George Bush's fault. So whatever cleanup needs to happen, it has nothing to do with President Obama and how you clear up something when you had one group run a country in Saddam Hussein. I don't mean to run over on this, but Saddam Hussein is a Sunni. They ran Iraq for 13 centuries.
Yep.
And if you don't know what a century is, that's 100 years. They had it for 13 centuries. So when Bush came in, they gave it to the opposition. So you think those guys aren't going to fight? That is, you know, so anyway, that kind of stuff is like what I'm saying about you have to update your memory and what you know, because we go through life thinking black or white, A or B, and the world doesn't really, it doesn't really roll that way. So I think that what's going on with the Republicans, they bank on fear and hate for support, and when that dwindles and washes away, they have no leg to stand on. They have no policies. They put up no budget. They put up nothing.
Yeah.
what's going on in Iraq is something that we'll get an update of the news, NPR news, coming up in about another hour or so. What's going on over there is just ridiculous, and I think that's going to probably be a topic or a subject matter for next week once we get more information and be able to have more of an intelligent conversation about it. It's ridiculous what's happening over there. So, Mr. Elias, do you feel the same way? Do you think Republicans should their heads be on swivels now, the fact that the number two has gone down?
Oh, without a doubt, man. Without a doubt. You know, and like I said, man, if they hadn't gerrymandered more of the districts, a lot of them would be gone. They would be, you know, they would be gone because, you know, people are tired of non-action in the Congress, man. I know I am. Yeah, you can only stop jobs, bills, and people from getting fair wages for so long, man, without people having uprising and getting rid of you. So, hey, the people have spoken. Get rid of number two. The number two guy's gone. So,
yeah.
I think a lot more heads are going to roll, to be honest.
Yeah. When the number two guy goes, now I can see if it was three or four, but when number two goes away, then people need to be a little nervous. And I think Eric Cantor learned a very valuable lesson here, that you need to pay attention to your constituents. And the fact that he took them for granted, I think that played a huge role in it. I mean, because, you know, one of the things that the guy Dave Pratt was able to say, or Brad, or whatever his name is, he said, look, when was the last time this guy been in this district? When was the last time you saw him? You know, I mean, you know, you can sit here and say that you're for the people, by the people, for the people, but if you don't show up and represent the people or even talk to the people, then, you know, come on. He's going out having, you know, steak dinners with some high-profile folks, and he's forgetting the common folk, and the common folk spoke, and he's out of there. So, wow, interesting.
You know, Jay, I think that what happens is they, when you said that about learning a lesson, I wouldn't go too far on that because they don't learn lessons.
I think
they try to end them. So just like everyone's saying it's a Tea Party issue and that the Tea Party had a lot to do with it, it had more to do with people not liking you. When you lose after your polling says, oh, by the way, the 35% polling, it was the same pollster who said that Mitt Romney was going to win, by the way. He's going to win Ohio and like four other states. He had that's the same pollster. By the way,
well, you're right. They didn't learn anything if they used that guy. Jesus Christ,
exactly.
He was wrong then.
Because
my goodness,
they think that they're flukes. So learning lessons is not really shouldn't be high on a priority list if you're thinking that somebody's getting smarter. They try to work the world until it comes around to the way they think. That's why they put those fake polls out there to make you believe something.
Right. Well said. All right, folks. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about African American fathers. Where are we now? Are we doing a better job when it comes to taking care of our children? Plus, should we recognize single mothers on this day as well? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to The Serious Side on a beautiful Father's Day. Happy Father's Day, guys. We'll be right back.
This is a test.
As we jump into the second set with laughter, a hearty laughter from Talking Style. Welcome back in, folks. 347-850-1272.
A show for women, by women. Is your resident map of the South. My little daughter.
Good Sunday morning to you, folks, and welcome into the Serious Side of the TJRS, broadcasting live from the Smooth Jazz Jazz Cafe.
Powerhouse Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You are tuning in to the True Purpose Development Show. Tonight, we...
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
all the rocks upon which we build our lives, we are most dependent on the family. The family is that most important foundation. And we are called to recognize and honor how critical every father is to that foundation. They are teachers and coaches, they're mentors, and they're role models. They are examples of success and the men who constantly push us towards success.
Welcome back. Top of the hour, 347-850-1272 is our caller number, 347-850-1272. You're listening to the Serious Side of the J. Ryle Show, which happens every Sunday morning right here on the TGRS Radio Network, online radio at its best. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. I have another Happy Father's Day wish. This goes out to Franklin, love that name, from Sharice. Your daughter, she wants to wish you a happy Father's Day, and they are checking in from Charlotte, North Carolina. Used to hang out there for a little bit. Beautiful town. Haven't been there in years, so I'd like to go back. I want to say what's up to our panelists as always. Mr. Elias is here with us this morning. Good morning, Mr. Elias.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Father's Day to everyone.
And, of course, the smartest man in the world, Jerome Esprit, is in the house. Good morning, Jerome.
Hey, good morning, and happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you and yours. Take your father out somewhere nice. And listen, if you bought your father a tie, hey, depending on what type of father he is, he may appreciate that. But I tell you something, if your dad is over 50, don't buy him any type of rockerwear. Don't do that. He's not going to want that, okay? All right, listen, we're going to talk about black fathers coming up here. Look, African-American fathers, you know, we've always had these conversations because I think that it's important for us to be able to do an assessment of ourselves, where we are as far as if we're doing the right thing when it comes to our family, comes to our children. You know, we talk about how African-American fathers are missing in a lot of families. And I remember having a conversation a while back here on this show where we talked about, I was in a room with a bunch of brothers, and we just started asking each other. We started talking about fathers, and we asked, you know, there were like 10 of us in there, and 9 of us grew up without a father in the home. And, you know, we like to think about that being a problem nowadays, but you have to think, we were born in the 60s, and for us to be going through this, so I guess the question nowadays is, are we more active? Are we doing the right thing? Mr. Elias, just the eyeball test. Do you think that there are more African-American fathers being active in the home? Do you think there are more kids being born out of wedlock? I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
I mentioned to a lot of kids, Jay, so... I know a lot of fathers are missing. I know a lot that are
really?
Missing. But, you know,
wow.
Yeah. I do. I mentor to a lot of kids. But the bottom line is I'm watching some of the younger generations that I know of, and some of the younger generations are being great fathers. I know of like six guys that are in their 20s that have kids, and they're right there with their kids. It warms my heart to see these young men being fathers to their kids, and I was like, you know, some of the aunts that I know, they said, "Well, you want me to watch your son?" He was like, "Nope." I know one guy that takes his he owns his own business, and he takes his son to work with him every day. I mean, it's heartwarming to see that these young kids are taking responsibility, sole responsibility for their kids, man. It's a wonderful thing. So, you know. It's good and bad with it, is what I'm going to say. So I mentioned to a lot of kids that I'm also starting to see a trend where these younger guys are taking care of their kids.
Well, let me ask you this. When you talk about good and bad, and, you know, you must have been reading my mind because you talked about some of these young fathers at the age of 20. What about, you know, kids just being born? I don't know. Because on one hand, if there's no commitment, Mr. Elias, there's nothing that requires the father to hang around. In other words, if you're just having babies, yeah, that's great to take care of them, but is that really resolving the problem? I mean, do we want a lot of single fathers out there? I mean, I guess that's what the true question is that by them having these babies out of wedlock, I mean, does that really resolve the problem?
Resolving the problem. Well, the problem is, man, maybe you know, the kid, may, you know, maybe the
Or is that the problem? I guess that's the better question. Is that the problem? Just having these kids out of wedlock?
Well, that's always going to be kids out of wedlock. Hell, you got 50-year-old men having kids out of wedlock. So that's not an older or younger thing. It's just how do you respond to your kid? How they responding to their kid? And that's the most important part is, to me, how do you respond and how are you taking care of your own? Are you relying on somebody else to do it? Are you pushing your kid off on somebody else to do it? Or are you doing it?
So, for example, let's say that we have a guy, and I've read the story, a guy, he has 20 kids. He's taking care of all of them, but he has 20 kids. Is that a problem? Even though he's taking care of his kids.
No, it's not.
What
if he's married to a woman? What if he was married to a woman and
by
he had
different
20 kids
mamas,
by one
different
woman?
Baby mamas, Miss Elliott.
Is he taking care of his kids?
He's taking care of them.
That's a generational crime. Well, he's taking care of his kids. Wow. He's truly taking care of them. Then they have a father.
Wow. Jerome, your thoughts?
Oh, I don't know where to begin. Let's start with,
do you think, I mean, just by what you know, you're active in the community, do you think we're doing a better job of being a part of the family unit when it comes to African-American families, brothers, daddies?
I don't think that we really lost too much of a step for those people who want to be a part of the bigger family. Like, I was a kid who listened to elders, and I know that when
your mic's
I'm
low,
around,
Jerome. We can barely hear you.
Oh, okay. I may have been moving around a little bit. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Or
you sound a little better, but
okay.
I want people to get this knowledge. Oh, there you go. I want people to get the full throttle of you because, you know, we're trying to educate
okay.
people this morning. There you go. You're good now.
Okay. I was moving around a lot. Well,
okay.
I was one of those kids who listened to elders a lot, and so I hung around a lot of older folks, and I noticed that even when I'm around, the kids who are listening. You know what I mean? And I don't see a big difference in that, but the people who gravitate towards other stuff just gravitate away. I don't think that we're doing a worse or better job than what people have done in the past. I think that's a part of youth who trying to find your own path, and there are some kids that don't listen until they turn a certain age. Depends how they're cultured, but I don't think we're any worse than we are. I think that we are overall smarter. You know, and I know that in the news, and I'm going to do news in a second. I was just looking at a story where African Americans are consuming more radio, like by percentage than everybody else, which is amazing because we wouldn't even think that we listen to the radio that much, as much as, you know what I mean? Like it's just interesting to me that our numbers are showing something different to what our thinking is, and that's why I always emphasize that we need to change our thinking. Because it's not based in reality. It's based on what's happened in the past and how we feel about ourselves about what's happened in the past and using extreme examples of negative to determine everybody else going forward.
347-850-1272 is our caller number. You're listening to The Serious Side of the J. Rao Show on Father's Day. We're talking about the African-American father. Where are we? Are we doing a better job? And you know, it's a hard question to answer for me because on one hand, you know, there are guys out there. I remember I was listening to a local show here in town. They were talking about this guy called in and said that he has been trying to see his son and that the mother will not allow him to see the son. He's paying child support. He's doing everything that he needs to do. But yet and still, the mother is becoming that roadblock and will not allow him to see his kid. And, you know, people called in and they were, you know, wishing this guy well and things of that nature. I mean, I didn't comment on it because, there's two sides of the story. You never know what's going on. But I do know of a situation where a young man has done everything in his power to see his kid and do the right thing by his kid. And the mother just keeps blatantly saying to hell with what the judge says. You know, there are times when he's supposed to have visitation and she just won't give it to him. But if he's laid on child support or if he doesn't pay child support, she's the first one to run to court, and they're the first ones to make sure that, you know, he does the right thing. So where is the justice in that? We've always had conversations about those types of things. Yes, Ms. Elliott.
What about the gentleman that was in Houston that overpaid child support and was taken to jail because he wanted to spend more time with his kid? What about that gentleman?
Didn't we talk about that on the show?
Yeah, I don't know if we did, if we didn't, but I remember that case. That guy's in. They took that guy to jail because the judge
said. We did talk about that.
Okay, maybe we did. About him?
I mean, so I guess for every positive story that you find out there, but are there negative stories? For me, it is so hard to try to figure out what's going on here. And this is a problem. This is not something that is isolated. I mean, this is a problem overall. And I guess my question is, how do we even get to this point where you have so many kids out here that are in single-parent homes? Where you have the dad is not doing what they need to do. Now, let me throw this at you guys. And I guess we're somewhat blessed to not have a female on the panel this morning, because I know what would happen after I make this comment. My question to you is this. How much do we blame the females in this? Because we're always pointing the fingers at the black fathers, say they're not doing what they're supposed to do, but what about the females, Mr. Elias? Do we look at them and say, hey, you should have known better or what? What do we do? What do we say about that?
Well, you know, look, man, I know a young lady who has a child by a guy who had eight other mothers that he wasn't
baby mamas.
That he wasn't even taking care of. When he wasn't even taking care of the kids, and she still
did she
had
know
a child
that though?
So,
did she
yeah,
know
she
that?
She knew that going in. Yeah, she knew that going in, and she thought she was going to be different. So when she said that, you know, she thought she's going to be different, I was like, that's your fault. That one indeed is your fault. She's to blame for that one. You can't sit here and this guy wasn't taking care of his other kids and you thought because he told you he would take care of his, that would indeed change? No. You knew damn well what was going on.
Interesting. 347-850-1272. I want to play a portion of a speech that President Obama, then Senator Obama, made while he was on the campaign trail. I want to play this. And Jerome, after we play this bit, this sound clip, I want to ask you those same questions because I think it's important for us to. And I'm just picking your brains here. I mean, I really and truly, there's no agenda with this whatsoever. I'm asking these questions because I am seriously just genuinely curious as to where we are with this and other people's feelings about this. So here's the president when he was Senator Obama when he was talking about fathers. Let's listen in and we'll talk on the other side.
Of all the rocks upon which we build our lives, we are most dependent on the family. The family is that most important foundation. And we are called to recognize and honor how critical every father is to that foundation. They are teachers and coaches, they're mentors, and they're role models. They are examples of success and the men who constantly push us towards success. But if we're honest with ourselves, we'll admit that too many fathers are also missing. Too many fathers are MIA. Too many fathers are AWOL. Missing from too many lives and too many homes. They've abandoned their responsibilities. They're acting like boys instead of men. And the foundations of our family have suffered because of it. You and I know this is true everywhere, but nowhere is it more true than in the African-American community. We know that more than half of all black children live in single-parent households. Half. A number that's doubled since we were children. We know the statistics that children who grow up without a father are five times more likely to live in poverty and commit crime. They're nine times more likely to drop out of school, 20 times more likely to end up in prison. They're more likely to have behavioral problems or run away from home or become teen parents because the father wasn't in the home. The foundations of our community and our country are weaker because of this. Think about it. How many times over the last year has this city lost a child at the hand of another child? How many times have our hearts stopped in the middle of the night with the sounds of gunshot or sirens? How many teenagers have we seen hanging out on street corners instead of hanging out in the classroom? How many are sitting languishing in prison when they should be working or at least looking for a job? How many in this generation are we willing to lose to poverty or violence or addiction? How many? We can't simply write these problems off to past injustices. Those injustices are real. There's a reason why our families are in disrepair, and some of it has to do with a tragic history. But we can't keep on using that as an excuse. Some of it has to do with the failures of our government, and those failures are real. But we can't keep on using that as an excuse. Yes, we need fewer guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. Yes, we need more money for our schools and more outstanding teachers in the classroom and more after-school programs for our children. Yes, we need more jobs and more job training and more opportunity in our community. We know all that. That's why I'm running for President of the United States of America. We know we need to bring about change in America. We know that. But the change we need is not just going to come from government. It's not just going to come from a president. It's going to come from us. It's going to come from each and every one of us. We need families to raise our children. We need fathers to recognize that responsibility doesn't just end at conception. That doesn't just make you a father. What makes you a man is not the ability to have a child. Any fool can have a child. That doesn't make you a father. It's the courage to raise a child that makes you a father.
That was then-Senator Obama speaking at an African-American church talking about black fathers as we celebrate Father's Day today. Now, when you listen to that, Jerome, all the things he said, saying statistics are saying that kids who don't have fathers in the homes could end up down these paths. It makes you wonder. It makes you think out loud, at least for me, what an important role a father plays, not only in a child's life, but in the family unit's life in general. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, this is always kind of difficult for me just in taking up the high ground of,
right.
of looking at our culture and our lives and looking at the big picture. But those numbers are what they are, and we need to kind of address them. And there are people who it's one of the reasons why I never jump on anybody who's a civil rights advocate or a community organizer or people who speak to folks directly in the community. My concern is always how that plays out in the big picture. So having the president speak about something is putting me on a different plane where people usually use things against us when you criticize black people in public. But
right.
Truly, I understand and I agree that we need to take action and take some steps to correct a lot of the measures that are sometimes our fault and sometimes are not our fault. So we have to take some responsibility, but at the same time, it is not to let others off of the hook for a part of their part in the oppression side of, you know, the harsh incarceration and all of those things of if you were with somebody and they committed a crime, you go to jail. There's all these nuances that play into why we have spiraled like we have when it comes to youth, but I can't ignore one for the other just to comment to pat on the back some of the things that are obvious. So he, as a senator, yes, those are things that he should have spoke about, and, you know, he represented Illinois, you know, the problems that they have in Illinois. So,
yeah.
In any major city, I should say. But, you know, you have to speak to them as a leader. You have to speak to them. But you can have a carrot and stick thing. You can speak out of love and wellness at the same time that you criticize. So, You know, he's a prime example of somebody who's been successful, so you can't look at him and say that his criticism has something to do with how he turned out. He's just acknowledging that this is existing, but don't think that all
yeah,
white people are
point.
Bad.
That's a damn good point to bring up, Jerome. I'm glad you said that. Now, let me throw this out here to you guys. And once again, we're going to take advantage of the woman-free zone that we have here this morning. Let me ask you this. I saw something where there are now Happy Father's Day cards for single mothers. Let me start with you, Jerome. Do you agree with that?
Nope.
Why?
We are lucky we have no women out here. Because that's crazy. You know, we have gone so far with women's rights and all of that other stuff, and I'm not saying that women should not be equal. That's true. But you don't have to impose on everything else because of an equality issue, right? It's like
mm-hmm.
saying that you can't have your child's birthday because you gave birth to them, right? I mean, I used to give my mom a gift on my birthday, but that was just me. But I don't think that you could always impose on something else because of your, you know what I mean? It just seems kind of convoluted. No, there should not be a happy Father's Day card on Mother, happy Mother's Day on Father's Day card if there's not a happy father on Mother's Day card as well.
That's a good point, Mr. Elias. Now, keep in mind, there are a lot of single mothers out there who plays the both roles. Do you agree? Do you think that women should be able to, you know, people should be able to purchase these cards and give Father's Day cards for mothers, to mothers?
No, I don't. No, I don't at all, because bottom line is you got Mother's Day, you got Father's Day. Today is to celebrate the Father's Day. You know, like I said,
but what if the mother played the role
on.
Of the father, though? I mean, what if the mother played the role?
I said this on Mother's Day. What about the fathers that play the role of mothers and fathers on Mother's Day? Look, it's to celebrate the father. And that's what it's about. You're celebrating the father. It's his day. No, I don't agree with that. The bottom line, and on Mother's Day, I don't agree. You should get a father that's playing both roles of Mother's Day card. It's your Father's Day, Father's Day, Mother's Day, Mother's Day. Leave it at that, man. Bottom line.
You know, our colleague, Miss Terry, from the Jay Ryle Show, she checked in. She said, hell no, it's Father's Day, not single Mother's Day. You can play both roles, but you can never be a man. That's interesting. You know, so now, I'm glad to hear that from her, from a female's perspective, because I know that I'm in an argument with someone else, and she is livid that we're even talking about this. And then she goes on to say that if the mother played that role, then, you know, the bottom line is that we should be recognized on this day. I'm not going to put her name out there because she didn't say I could. As soon as she says I can, I will. And then you guys can go to Facebook and beat her up all you want to. But she is not happy with the conversation and the commentary, because she feels that, hey, if a mother has played both roles, then she should be recognized as such. But we're saying no. That's not the case.
If a mother is driving around carpooling, do we give her an award for being a taxi driver? Like, you just can't, dude, you can't assume everything, right?
Right.
And so we all play many roles, right? I don't call myself a mentor, but there are adults who call me for advice all the time. But I don't say I'm a mentor to adults, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, it seems kind of strange to me that we have to take credit for every doggone thing that we do. Mm. I think they're just titles. And you have to just exist on your own plane, right? So there are fathers that are nurturing. Just because you make a sandwich and pack a lunch doesn't say that you get to take the rights of Mother's Day from mothers because he was more nurturing than she was because she worked more. Like, I don't know. I think we just kind of crossed a really funny line on responsibility. Appreciation is appreciation, right? And so we appreciate mothers on Mother's Day, and we appreciate fathers on Father's Day. I don't know why we have to mix them all.
Right. Easy said it best. He said in the chat room, he said, you give the mothers double kudos on Mother's Day. Leave it at that. I agree.
Well, you know, this mother is saying that this person that I'm in this in this back and forth with, she's saying that what if it's a situation where the father left and it was not the mother, because I think she has a problem with what we were talking about, where we said, okay, do we look at mothers? In some cases, the mama is being at fault as well. In the example you brought up, Ms. Delias, where this woman thought she can change a guy who had multiple kids. And so you become a victim of the circumstance, but yet still we celebrate the fact that you're a single mother. We celebrate these things. But at the end of the day,
you know, you kind of put yourself in that predicament. And what this lady's saying, what if she didn't put herself in that predicament? What if the guy just left? Then, I mean, that should still justify and constitute the fact that she should receive a Father's Day card a Mother's Day card on Father's Day because it was to do to no fault of her own. And I guess she wants us to kind of go back and forth with that. I agree with you guys. I think that, you know, look, they had their – see, to me, Mr. Elias, it sounds like this is a person who wants double gifts. She wants gifts in on May and in June. You know what I'm saying? So and I say that jokingly. I'm not trying to make light of the topic. But she's very passionate about this. And I don't know. I guess can we at least acknowledge that she may have a point? Let me start with you, Mr. Elias. Does she have a point? Does she have a point?
No, she doesn't have a point. No.
Wow. Okay.
No.
Shoot her down.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, and I'm going to assume that Jerome's going to go down that same avenue.
Well, yeah, I don't think she has a point. I understand, though. Maybe her road was tough. I mean, but I think you should appreciate when you appreciate them. If your child wants to celebrate you on Father's Day as well as Mother's Day, fine. Just like Christmas or Easter or whatever you want to celebrate somebody, celebrate them every day. But I don't think that one negates the other because you're mad at the guy that he can't be a father to his child. I think everybody serves different roles.
All right, so now based on what the president said when he was a senator back in 2008, which was not that long ago, he said over half of the African-American children are growing up in single households where the father's not around. I know we say this every time we talk about any problem or problems that exist within our community, but the bottom line is there anything we can do about this? I mean, come on, fellas, is there anything we can really and truly do about this?
No, I think that those problems were created a long time ago. I mean,
right.
Think about, you know, the 60s and the 70s and right, during social services time when you can't have a man living in a house. And so you get your benefits cut or whatever. Those separation of family things took generations to create and won't fix overnight. You just can't say, well, we should just do something different. I mean, you can as an individual, but I'm saying statistically, those numbers are going to trend in the way that they're trending, let alone we're not taking for account of other ethnic groups or non-minorities, white folks, who have the same problem, and their numbers are even higher than ours. So when we start talking about what's going on with other communities, we negate that like we're on an island because we are the harshest affected group. So that's been a trend in this country for a while. But MTV's 16 and Pregnant don't feature a lot of black folks. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
That whole teenage pregnancy, out of wedlock stuff is making its way on Lifetime and on MTV. That's not for our consumption. They're sending a message to their own community. So I think that's going around.
Yeah. What about you, Mr. Elias? Do you really and truly, I mean, is this really something that we can get a handle on? I mean, you think about it. Is this something that we can really and truly get a handle on?
I I don't think so, Jay. I think about what Jerome just said there. It refers to my favorite movie, one of my favorite movies, Claudine, where James Earl Jones was barely not making enough money to get by, and she had all these kids, but she couldn't
movie.
Have a, she couldn't have anything in the house to like a TV or this other. Look, man, social service, man. They don't want these different black families to stay together because if there's a man in the household, back in the day, you had to leave. You had to get out. So, bottom line, you know, if there's jobs out there to be created, the man wanted to work, they should allow it. They should pay a fair wage to people, man. That's, to me, that's where it starts. That if you're paying these men a fair wage and you're paying people to come to work and you give them a decent living to make a wage instead of having all this corporate greed, things would be a lot better to me.
Hmm.
Can I come in on your Claudine story? Because Claudine,
yeah.
You haven't
yeah.
seen Claudine.
Yeah.
It's classic.
Yeah.
They take the old iron and they take the new iron,
yeah.
put it away, put the old one out, roll out the old TV,
yeah.
take the rug up. You had to be
yeah.
on social services. They'll make
yeah.
you sell your car to be on social services. So you can't work.
Yeah.
You have to catch the bus if you want to be on social services.
Right.
Hurricane Rod.
Oh, man, absolutely. 347-850-1272. Let's get out to the phone lines. We have one of our favorite listeners on the line, Stiletto. Oh, we just lost him. He must have gone through a part of town. You know, Stiletto's a truck driver, and he tunes in when he's on the highway. He may have hit a bad patch. He'll call back. We'll get him in before the set's out. We're talking about Father's Day, African-American dads. We're somewhat doing an assessment of where we are. And, you know, the numbers are staggering when you look at the numbers as far as how many families that are out there without the African-American father. You know, it was really funny listening to the president talk during that speech when he was a senator. And you talk about all the different things where kids who don't have fathers in the home, all the different things that could go wrong for them. It looks like Stiletto's called back in. Let's see, can we get him in there? Stiletto, good morning. Welcome to the Serious Side.
All right. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Everyone's
good
doing well,
man.
Doing? Happy Father's Day,
happy
my brother.
Happy Father's Day to everybody.
You
know,
there
was a question that Mr. Ryle asked. Can this situation be fixed with us? Now, what do you mean us as blacks in America?
I don't know. I mean, Stiletto, I don't know. I just don't know. It's open-ended. I don't care how we fix it. I really and truly don't know. I mean, I'm saying, well, can we ever fix this? Will we 10 years from now be having the same – can we walk in a room like I walked in a room back in 1980-something with a bunch of guys in the room, 10 of us, and out of 10 of us, 9 of us did not have fathers in our homes? I mean, will that number change 10 years from now?
Jay, you know, you make a good point. I had a father in that. I had a father there, but he wasn't there. You see what I'm saying? He was on a golf course. He was doing his own thing.
Right.
You and I, we have the same situation. He was there, but he wasn't there. And I'm not speaking bad about my father, but see, my father never knew his father, never seen his father. So we all come from the same thing. He never knew, he never seen. So I think that my father, by him not knowing or never seen, didn't know how to deal with the family issues that was brought between my mother and himself. So the way that he dealt with it by, I'm going to go out here and play golf and get my handicap better.
Wow. Now, hang on still a little. Don't go nowhere. I want to kick this around a little bit in a few minutes we have left. Hey, did you hear what he just said? Could it be it's a generation situation, Jerome, where here we are, I don't know how to be a father to my kids because I never had that in my home. So now when you say that, to me, that makes the problem looks worse because we're talking about something that's being handed down from generation to generation to generation. Jerome, your thoughts?
You know, I don't know. Like, I don't know the answer to that question. My father is a great golfer as well.
But he was there.
Like,
he was there, though.
I'm not saying that. He worked third shift. Like, he worked shift work. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is that everybody's situation is different. It depends on when you were raised. Men did what they did. And I'm not sure that it made me a better or worse person, like that he was not around as much. Right? And so I stayed a lot of time in the park when I was little, so I didn't stay home much, so I don't know. Could they blame me for turning out to be a bad child because they let me go to the park from sunup to sundown? I had to come home and eat, and sometimes I come eat and go back to the park. Like, I don't know. I became a good basketball player, but all I'm saying is that I can't blame one for the other, and sometimes there are kids you have to look after. And there are kids, sometimes you don't. I stayed at my aunts, uncles, and my cousins. So it depends what your support group is. But, again, I wouldn't blame him for anything, although I can't say that, hey, this in particular was something that my father kept me in line with. And I don't think that that's the case. I mean, everybody's different, though, so everybody's going to have their own opinion. If something scars you in life, of course you have an opinion on it, and when it doesn't, you just don't.
What about you, Mr. Elias? What do you think? I mean, Stiletto brought up a very good point. This is a generational thing where, you know, hey, listen, my father wasn't around. I'm just going to pass it on. I mean, and can you blame, if that's the case, can you blame
some of these guys who are out here really shucking and abandoning their responsibilities when they've never experienced it. So how do you expect them to react when they have never been a part of a loving home where a father was present in their house? Your thoughts?
Well, you know, man, we get all kinds of cases where it's a generational thing. And you never know, man, what a kid's going to turn out to be. The president's father wasn't in his home. So he became president. Look at Jerome. Jerome just said, you know, he did his thing. Jerome turned out to be a great guy. So, I mean, and your father wasn't in your home. So you guys, you know, that's three examples of the parents, the fathers that weren't in the home. That guys turned out to be pretty good fellas. So I think it's the support system that you have, and the backbone that's put there. It's always guys that are in your life that mentor to you, that step up to the plate. Now, if you don't have those guys in your life that mentor to you, that step out there and say, hey, look, life, you can become a success in life, and this is how you can become a success in life, and lay out a blueprint to you and let you know that education is the key to a lot of things in life, then, hey, man, yeah, positive, you're going to run into a bad situation. So
I got a question. I got a question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
The further we begin to move west, we begin to lose our identity history and our history lineage. If we start with Ethiopia and the eastern part of Africa, I talk to those people, and I say, how far back can you guys go in terms of your lineage with your great, 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 greats? And they say, well, we can usually go back 2,000, maybe 1,500 years, and I can give you my great, 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 great grandfather's name. The more west you start coming across Africa, it begins to dwindle down. Now, if you talk to the people around Nigeria, Ghana, Chad, they say, well, I can give you maybe 300-400 years back to who my grandfather is. Now, Jerome, Mr. Elias, and Jay Ryle, how far back can you gentlemen go?
Wow, that's a damn good question, because I tell you, I can't go far at all. Wow. I can't. I am being honest. I can't. I mean, it is. Wow. I can't. I can't. What about you, Ms. Phillips?
It's always been African culture, and I don't even call myself African no more, because the continent was named after a European general named Scipio Africanus. So I no longer call myself African. But when you look at it, our culture has always taught the children coming up from out of the womb on up to being adults who your lineage and people are.
I can go
back to the late 1700s.
Yeah,
really?
I can go back to like the 18s. Yeah.
Man, I can go back to the 60s and I'm done. I mean, and I don't even think. and look, I'm being nice. I think it's really the 70s, to be honest with you. After that, bro, I'm gone. Wow. You guys are going to make me go do some homework today. Thanks, Stiletto, man. Hold on for a second. Let's bring Easy in real quick before we close the set out. Good morning, Easy. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, Jay. Great conversation today. Great conversation.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
I got a couple things to say. I'll keep them short. You know, the first thing I want to say is, you know, over, we're talking about, you know, having too many kids in a family nowadays. Well, years ago, back in like the 1920s, 1900s, you know, when like my grandparents came over from Europe, my great-great-grandparents came over from Europe, you know, when they got to Ellis Island, you know, they were pretty much all alone. You know, they were either by themselves or with their wife, or maybe one child. You know, when they got over here, my grandpa was telling me that, you know, they needed their kids to help support the family. And, you know, they had multiple, like my grandparents had 10 kids. And the ones before him, his parents had 8. And it was all based on being able to help the family. You know, and I guess they felt, you know, there's always the saying, and you know, there's safety in numbers, you know. And I guess they applied that there. They felt, you know, the more family they had, the more prosperous they're going to be, and the more the family could work the businesses like they used to. And, you know, I think it was all that mentality that was instilled into these people. And another thing I wanted to say is, you know, I have a friend of mine from China, and, you know, he just had a baby girl, and that's the only one he's allowed to have. And he's trying to figure out a way to come over here to the United States, and he wanted a time like when his wife was going to have a baby, so his baby would be born here in the USA. It was just like a big mess trying to figure that out, you know, so we kind of scratched that idea. But, you know, I mean, anybody have multiple families nowadays, you know, unless you can afford it, I don't think it's recommended you have it. I mean, if you're a billionaire, Bill Gates, hey, have all the kids you want, you know. But I think it's all based on financial, you know, because if you can't take care of these kids, the marriages are going to last, the kids aren't going to do what they're supposed to be doing, going to school and college, and if they can afford it. And, you know, it's just a big pattern, like, you know, it needs to stop somehow. Like you were saying, you know, how do you stop it? Well, China stopped it. You know, they just said, hey, no more kids. One kid, that's it.
Well, now, you know, Easy, they're considering changing that policy, that law.
Yeah, but they're not going to change it by one more kid, two kids. So, you know, another thing I want to say, too, for everybody, you can go on Ancestry.com. They have a 30-day free trial there. And you can go on there for free and trace your history back, I mean, as far as you can. I trace mine back from Europe and what boat they took. So that's a free service there for 30 days, and then after that you have to pay for it. But that's a pretty good thing to sign up for. Or there's the Mormon have site. You can go to themormons.com somehow, and they have a genealogy department there, and they offer a lot of free stuff in the Army. So you can find out who your grandparents were, and you can find out a lot. I found out so much about my family history. I even called a sixth cousin, you know what I mean, and got in touch
really?
With him, and right where my father was. Yeah, I didn't know where my dad grew up at when he was real young, and I had to contact one of my grandfather's brother's kid. And pretty interesting. You know, that Ancestry.com. So it's free. All you got to do it for your time.
All right, man. Well, hey, man, listen, as always, appreciate you listening. And happy Father's Day to you, because I know
thank you, you're a dad as well.
Happy Father's Day.
Same to all the fathers out there.
Appreciate you. All right, so listen. Thanks, Easy. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't cut him off. All right, so listen. Let's do our final thoughts on this, because we have to get, you know, Jerome is waiting. I can't wait. I missed it last week. I'm itching. So give me your final thoughts, guys, on this topic. Start with you, Jerome.
Okay. Well, I just want to say to Easy, Ancestry is also owned by the Mormons as well. So I don't know what big thing that they took up, but for some reason they've been collecting genealogy data for a few hundred years.
Okay.
Mormon Church for you. I guess the thing that I just want to say is that there is no strict formula on how anybody is raised. It's the climate that they're raised in. And we have to just kind of make sure that we have some kind of grip or handle on the environment that you're raising your children in, more than you need to know, more than you need to figure them out. Because they will figure it out, even if you don't, but you have to make sure that you put them in an environment where they can succeed. All of those stresses that your kid faces, it's just like adults. We normally don't tell you. We just keep pushing. And so you have to do that with your children as well.
Well, that's well said, man. Thank you. Mr. Elias, man, give me your final thoughts on this topic, my friend.
My final thoughts are this, man. The state of the black father, it's something systemic problem, man. Look, the government has stepped in and told us, you know, you can't have this, you can't do this, you can't do this. How do you succeed without a handout? None of us have succeeded without a mentor or a hand up or somebody teaches us the way to go. So how to resolve the problem, to me, you know, man, you know, look, stop blocking people from getting things that they need, man. That's just the bottom line. You know, that there's always going to be corruption anywhere you go, but there's also people that want to succeed in life. And if you succeed in life, man, it's nothing better.
Wow. All right, folks, we're not done yet. Coming up, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week, plus chatterbox, and man, I have a lot to go through. We'll talk about it, Mr. Elias, during the break. And on a need-to-know basis, we're 10 minutes away from that. You're listening to The Serious Hour on a beautiful Sunday. Happy Father's Day, guys. We'll be right back.
Omówiono najważniejsze sprawy związane z dalszym rozwojem województwa i kraju.
The week that was in the news.
Got some sad breaking news to bring your way. This just into CNN, word that legendary actress Ruby Dee has died. We are told that she died peacefully in her home yesterday in New Rochelle, New York. Ruby Dee, you might remember, she starred in Broadway plays and movies, notably opposite Sidney Poitier in A Raisin in the Sun. She was also active in the American Civil Rights Movement. She often starred opposite her husband, Ossie Davis. He died back in 2005. Ruby Dee was 91 years old.
Miriam Burbank died at the tragically young age of 53. But instead of settle for something drab and traditional, her children decided to send her off in style by propping her corpse up at a table surrounded by her favorite thing, booze, cigarettes, and Saints paraphernalia.
All right, folks, it is time for, before we go, a quick look at some stories that made headlines this past week. First of all, the passing of Ruby Dee. Mr. Elias, man, we lost Maya Angelou. Now we lost Ruby Dee. Oh, my God, man. Two powerful women that were a part of the struggle, man. Your thoughts?
Man, Ruby Dee, man. I always loved Ruby Dee, man. I did. I thought she was a powerful actress and an activist. So, man, she'll be sad. She'll be greatly missed, man. And that's tragic, man. You know, but... You know, yeah, great woman.
Yeah, great woman. Your thoughts, Jerome?
You know, and I have to say, you know, with Maya Angelou and Ruby Dee in particular, career spanned 60 years, theater, radio, television, movies. She was in the NAACP Southern Leadership Conference, Congress of Equal or Racial Equality, supported Malcolm and Martin. She put in work. And I have nothing but respect for her. And her documentary actually comes out next week, past week before her documentary, Life Essentials with Ruby Dee, premieres at the American Black Film Festival. By the way, okay. One of my favorite movies, Ruby Dee, Bucking the Preacher, by the way.
Wow.
You don't want to see that.
Wow.
Do you know that movie?
No, yes. I don't know that movie. No. We're going to check
Bucking the Preacher, Elias.
Yeah, Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier, and
there you go.
Preacher.
Yeah, it's a western.
It's a black western, man. Yeah.
Wow, isn't that something?
Check that out.
Yeah, my favorite movie is when she was in Do the Right Thing. But, you know, Mother Sister, I loved it. I ain't going to lie to you. It was pretty good for me. Well, all right, so listen. All right, the story of the lady that died at the age of 53, Miriam, whatever her last name is, her kids thought it would be cool to prop her corpse up at a table with beer, alcohol. I don't even know what to say. Mr. Elias, I'm just going to turn it over to you. What the hell were they thinking of?
Hey, man, if these are her favorite things. You know, I seen a guy on a motorcycle. I mean,
I have
too. That was
I mean, but
passed away. So, I mean, if this is how he want, is this what their mother's last wishes were? I don't know.
See, I don't think it was.
Respect what they wanted. Okay. Well, man, if that's how the mother lived their lives, I guess, man. I don't know.
And that's probably the reason why.
Put it like that.
That's probably the reason why she's propped up at that table, because of the crap that's on that table. Jerome, your thoughts, man. Jeez.
I want to turn it over to Elias. Like, I don't want to talk. Here's the thing. I think that is so traumatizing when people pass away. I know as a kid, I hated funerals. Like, I just couldn't. I won't look at the cast. I just, all of those things. Can you imagine, like, you have a repast with somebody, you see somebody propped up, what are you supposed to sit at the table? Like, what does that mean? That is horrible.
I don't get why people do
it
that.
Is.
I mean, it's nuts.
Right? If I should go, man.
Don't say it.
I want you to pop up at a table and put a joint in my hand.
Okay, well, we're going to move right past you. All right, thank you, Mr. Elias.
Yeah, let's do a show and just have you in front of the radio, Elias, and he'll just keep calling you.
Right.
You two guys. Views and opinions. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you won't do that. That's all.
Yeah. Michael Jordan is now a billionaire. His interest in the Charlotte Hornets are at $400 million, plus he's worth $600 million.
Mr. Jordan is a billionaire. Mr. LES, man, damn, but that's a lot of damn Air Jordans, my brother.
Yes, it is, man. Congratulations to Michael Jordan. Congratulations.
Yeah. And on a sad note, we just learned, and thanks to one of the people in the chat room typed in, looks like Casey Val Kasem. Val, appreciate you, sweetheart. Looks like Casey Kasem is no longer with us. When they took him off life support a few days ago, we knew it was just a matter of time. He was a pioneer in this business. And so, you know, kudos and, you know, rest in peace, Casey. And on that note, time for Chatterbox, final thoughts from the chat room. Mr. LES, man, let's get a couple in because we got to get Jerome in. So what do you have, man?
St. Clinton said, "Don't tread on me" flag was thrown one of the cops that was killed here in Vegas last weekend by the guy who killed him.
Oh, really?
And then, I got one from Val Singh. When Val Singh said President Barack Obama is urging fathers to get more involved in their kids' lives and to serve as mentors for children who don't have fathers around. And Easy got one here. Easy says, 20 kids isn't a good example to give his kids. What are you telling them? It's okay to have 20 kids. Lead by example, not by bad ones.
Wow. You know what? Let me read one here from Miss Terry, because Miss Terry said something in here. Let me get back to it. Boy. Here it says, I lost it. Miss Terry, I'm sorry that I messed up. I'm against time. Sorry. I'll read it in my final thoughts, Miss Terry. I promise you that. All right. That's it for Chatterbox. Coming up next on the Need to Know Basis with Jerome Esprit. But first, we'll take a quick break. Yes. We'll be back after that.
When I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up as he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. How I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Ooh. When I and my mother would disagree, to get my way I would run from her to him. He'd make me laugh just to comfort me, yeah, yeah. Then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night when I was asleep, he left a dollar under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. If I could one final dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. 'Cause I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Sometimes I'd listen outside her door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him. I'd pray for her even more than me. I'd pray for her even more than me. Mm-hmm. dance with my father again. Every night I fall asleep, and this is all I ever dream.
The White House says the scandal involving former CIA Director David Petraeus and General John Allen was a surprise to the president.
Folks, it is time for a need-to-know basis with our man Jerome. It's Free Jerome, man. What do you have for us on a beautiful Father's Day, my brother?
All right, so today is a must-read, and although President Barack Obama is not even halfway through a second term, New York Magazine's Jonathan Schultz notes that the president introduced four key points of reform during his first inaugural address: economic recovery, health care, education, climate change, and with the recent announcement of his new climate change, that he has accomplished all of his major policy agenda items for his president. And he said one of them would have failed, that any of them may have triggered a great depression-like meltdown, is what he wrote. So the president has been criticized, but Schultz writes, there's no doubt that his healthcare objectives are moving forward, and he believes that there's no doubt that it has fulfilled his original goal, and the president has now accomplished major policy responses on all of those things. So read that article in case you think the president has not been successful already. Now, Audra McDonald made history twice at the 2014 Tony Awards celebration. Mm-hmm. She took home her sixth Tony Award for performing as Billie Holiday in Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill. Now, her first one, she became the first person to win in all four performance categories, and she also broke the record for the most Tonys won by a performer. She's in her early 40s. She beat the record previously held by Angela Lansbury and Julie Harris, and won for Porgy and Bess, Raising the Sun, Ragtime, Master Class, and Carousel. She's won, been nominated eight times since 1994, and she's now six of eight. That's like the Grammys of Broadway.
Kudos to her. Wow. Good job.
Yes, sir. All right, now Father's Day spending is expected to be around $12.5 billion. So the average gift cost $113.80. $2.5 billion will be spent on people going out to dinner, going out and stuff. $1.8 billion on apparel. Get Jay some Rockaware. And $1.6 billion on electronics. $78 million Father's Days will be sold. Father's Day cards will be sold. It's the fourth largest greeting card day of the year. All right. Now, the NCAA announced that it has reached an unspecified deal with some of the athletes who sued them for their publicity rights. The deal also comes on the $40 million settlement that EA Sports has reached for some of the college athletes and their publicity and antitrust. Now, CBS has now intervened, and they're asking the court to have the NCAA keep their contract secret because CBS operates under a different market than the NCAA. After those billions of dollars that they gave the NCAA, they don't want to get sued to give some of that money to the athletes, so CBS has asked the court to hold off their contract. They can read it, but they don't want to release it to the public.
You said CBS?
Yes. They paid something like $3 billion to broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started.
Yep. So we see how this goes. Now, the Nielsen's second report on radio for the year looked at African Americans and Hispanic listeners and found that they both continue to represent a growth opportunity in the radio industry. African American listeners have, in fact, grown more
at a rate greater than all other radio listeners. The report also says, for example, that 91% of black men between 25 and 34 tune into the radio at least once a week, Monday through Sunday, between 6 and midnight. So they said the growth is remarkable. Yeah, what Nielsen's is saying, considering the variety and the number of media choices that the customers have these days. You know, have this
money. All right. People are listening. Good job.
Hey.
Thank
hey.
You.
Up Jay's money, BTR. People are listening. All right. Now, I don't know if you guys heard this story, but the Waffle House waitress was denied her $1,000 tip. Did you guys hear about this?
No.
Elias? Okay. Diane Brown.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, she worked at the Waffle House 3 a.m. on Mother's Day when a patron came in, and he said, "I'm going to bless you tonight." He paid his bill with a credit card, wrote $1,500 on the tip line, asked her to share $500 with what they said was a haggard-looking woman at a table nearby, and then he vanished into a cab, and the customer just said, "You have a good spirit," and gave her a $1,000 tip. Now, the Waffle House, which she was probably making minimum wage, wouldn't let her keep it, and they sent the money back. You can reverse charges on a credit card, and they wouldn't let her keep the $1,000 that the guy gave her.
Okay,
that's
is that it?
Right?
I mean, okay, so what's going to happen next? I mean, they just can't do that, can they?
Yeah, they can.
They did it.
She
should sue them, but apparently she's a waitress, so she's not going to take them to court.
Wow.
But a $1,000 tip, they sent back.
Yep, they sent it back, and they said because they didn't want him to come back later and dispute the charges. That's what they said.
Yeah. See, again, see how somebody intervenes on your behalf when you're black? We don't want nobody to say nothing to nobody. Anyway, that's
oh, boy. Wow.
Now, luxury lifestyle site Wordsbeat.com recently compiled a list of the richest pop stars and what they're worth. So we're going to go for the top five. Tied at fifth. Beyonce's Shania Twain at $350 million.
Shania Twain? Wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Celine Dion.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Celine Dion is worth $400 million. Mariah Carey, $500
million. Huh?
Michael Jackson, $600 million. This is this year. And Madonna is number one with $650 million this year.
And there are only two people out of that top five who have hits that are on the damn charts right now. Wow.
That just shows you don't need to be on the charts to make money. Just one
there
of
you go.
Now, here's something else that's in the news. The allowance for Prince, Harris, and Blanket Jackson has gone from $5 million to $8 million a year because their father's fortune has gone to $1.5 billion since his death 5 years ago. The three are given $15,000 to $20,000 of walk around money each month. Not saying Michael Jackson was broke. I just wanna keep telling y'all that. That's walk around money. Sound like somebody lived in Zumunda. That's walk around money. All right. Now this universe, this Thailand, she resigned no less than a month after her reign began because she was criticized harshly over social media. She was there, representative to go into Miss Universe, and she quit. Social media is getting out of hand. I just want to say that for the record.
It is.
Mm-hmm. It makes you resign your title. That's the problem. Now, in court, a New York State trooper who attended a party at a social club where strippers were serving as prostitutes, he was fired properly, is what the state of appeals court has ruled. I can't believe he tried to save his job, being that he was someplace where there were hookers. That was a nice try.
That's crazy. That is nuts. Yeah, all right, we have time for one more, Jerome.
All right, so here is... all right, so Oprah Winfrey has reunited the cast of A Different World, and Oprah has bought in the cast on Wednesday to tape their Where Are They Now episode. So cast members Sinbad, Don Lewis, Bree Summer, Jasmine Guy, Kathleen, and Daryl Bell was also there with Debbie Allen. So put the behind-the-scenes on our Facebook for Debbie Allen if you want to go see that. I do have one more for you. So I think you and LDS will find this thing. Scientists have created a pea-powered cell to generate energy for vehicles and homes. So a scientist in Korea University has outlined a plan to replace expensive platinum and fuel cells with Tyrone Adams from Human Urine. So if you run out of gas, well, you got to go. You can go.
Hey, well,
thank you, Jerome.
I swear to get enough fuel to get around the world the way I go, man. So, hey, thank you.
Pull over. Yeah, give me and let me travel.
Wow. I tell you what, Mr. Elias, and the continuation to that joke will happen on Wednesday night. I promise you that. All right, it's time for an NPR News update and then our final thoughts. We'll be right back after this. Thanks, Jerome.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. As President Obama weighs options to address the Sunni militants in Iraq, the U.S. is sending 3 warships to the Persian Gulf. The militants from the Al-Qaeda breakaway group known as ISIS have seized much of northern Iraq, but they've lost ground this weekend after pledging to march on the Iraqi capital of Baghdad. NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Dubai.
The fight in Iraq has become increasingly sectarian as the government relies on militias to bolster the national army. Kurdish and Shiite militias stopped the ISIS push into the capital. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki vowed to crush the rebellion in a speech from the city of Samarra, another sectarian sign. Samarra is deeply symbolic to Shiites because of the religious shrines there. The northern city of Mosul, a predominantly Sunni town, swiftly fell to Sunni militants after the army abandoned the fight, but also because Sunni tribes in Mosul reportedly welcomed the insurgents. Analysts say the crisis in Iraq is a political failure rather than a military one that needs an urgent political solution to stop the state from collapsing. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Dubai.
The former British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, is blaming the renewed violence in Iraq on the failure of Western countries to intervene in Syria. He's denying the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003, to which he committed British forces, is the cause of Iraq's problems.
Even if you left Saddam in place in 2003, then when 2011 happened and you had the Arab revolutions going through Tunisia and Libya and Yemen and Bahrain and Egypt and Syria, you would have still had a major problem in Iraq. Indeed, you can see what happens when you leave the dictator in place, as has happened with Assad now. The problems don't go away.
Mr. Blair spoke in an interview with the BBC. All 5 American soldiers killed in a possible friendly fire airstrike in Afghanistan have now been identified by the Pentagon. As Blake Farmer of member station WPLN reports, 2 of the men were special forces operators based at Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
The Defense Department had been waiting to release the name of Staff Sergeant Jason McDonald of Butler, Georgia, until contact was made with his family. The 28-year-old, along with Staff Sergeant Scott Studeman of Pasadena, California, were assigned to the 5th Special Forces Group at Fort Campbell. The Pentagon said they died June 9th during a combat incident now under investigation as fratricide. A jet called in to help ward off a Taliban attack reportedly bombed friendly forces. Also killed were Specialist Justin Helton, who was from an ordnance unit at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Corporal Justin Klaus and Private Second Class Aaron Toppin were part of the 4th Infantry Division out of Fort Carson, Colorado. Toppin was just 19 years old. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Folks, we hope you enjoyed your Father's Day. If you spent a portion of that day with us, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. But it's time for our final thoughts. And Jerome, man, you're up first.
All right. Well, my final thoughts are I wanted to do a quick news story about the Heinz Ketchup Company is now working with a couple of other companies to actually make auto parts out of used leftovers from tomatoes from making ketchup. So I just want to say the innovation that's going on in the world is bigger than you can imagine. And just know that things are getting better and things are getting, you know, there's more wellness. So between Ford and Heinz Company, they are recycling leftover 2 tons of tomatoes used for ketchup to make wiring brackets and bins for cars instead of petroleum-based plastic. So they're weaning themselves out of oil, and that's good. All right, just want to say have a good week, everybody.
All right, thank you so much, my friend, and once again, happy Father's Day to you and for all the things that you do for young kids. Mr. Elias, man, final thoughts.
Man, just, guys, look,
we talked about Father's Day, the state of black fathers. Look, you don't have to be a father to be a father. Just find kids and mentor to them, man. You know, some kids will never forget who you are and what you said to them. I got a kid I used to mentor to, and he's my barber to this day. And I was in his shop one day, and we were talking, and I heard him talking to these young men, and he was spewing the same knowledge to him, to these kids that I was spewing to him. So, hey, look, find a kid, mentor to him, and it'll impact the kid's life forever.
You know, one of the comments that Miss Terry made, and I wanted to read it, and I promised her I'd read it during my final thoughts. She said, look, fathers are doing a better job in the African-American community. It's always hard for me to say those terms together. Listen, I want to say happy Father's Day to a man who wasn't my dad by blood, but he's a guy that really and truly did everything in his power to make sure that we had the things that we needed to have. You know, even to this day, he continues to he plays that role for me. And I've just said, you know what, I start calling him Pops. Mr. Curtis Nevels, that's my stepdad. I appreciate you, and happy Father's Day on this beautiful day. And I will be giving you a call a little later on because, once again, you played that role for us. And you didn't have to. Even after you and my mom divorced, you continued to be a part of our lives. And let me tell you something. It takes a very strong man to do that because me, I'd have said, hey, to hell with you and your kids. So kudos for you hanging around. You know, God bless you. I love you. And I'll be calling you here shortly. So, Mr. LES, on that note, if it's Sunday, we're talking serious stuff. What time is it, my friend?
It's time for the serious side of the J. Rob Show.
God bless all the fathers out there for doing your thing. So for Jerome Esprit, for Mr. LES, I'm J. Rao, saying have a great work week. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Happy Father's Day. And remember, if we are talking serious stuff and it is Sunday, it is the serious side. God bless everybody.
You are listening to the TJRS Radio Network.